Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr and Mrs.
Oh, no,
yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gab Marcotti, and we thank you for joining us on this Thursday. We're going to do something a little bit different today. We're one third of the way through this Premier League season, and so we're going to bring you a special review of the campaign so far. Not quite award season, but if players and managers are willing to accept one third of an award, we're handing them out this morning.
And they should accept them, I think. In the studio with us, Times columnist and former Nottingham Forest defender, amongst others, Gregor Robertson.
Many others.
many others.
How many?
Only six, actually.
Only six?
Oh, see, not that much of a journeyman.
Yeah,
have you had six different employers in your life, Natalie?
No, I haven't, to be fair. And also with us from Opta, here to give us the statistical insight into the performances we've seen so far. A big welcome to Matt Furness as well. Hi.
Hello.
And how many different employers have you had, Matt?
Just one.
Just
always
the one.
Opta for life.
There you go.
Oh, goodness me.
So are you going to get sort of a Scudamore type loyalty bonus when the time comes to...
Yeah, probably £25. More than 250,000 per person, but well, I hope so.
You never know what happens in the future. And we're going to start with a category that we had initial discussions about on Monday, and that is the player of the season so far. Now, it was suggested that Virgil van Dijk and Eden Hazard were perhaps the most important players to their clubs. Matt, do the stats bear that out?
Yes, kind of. I mean, so to give you a bit of background, we have a index scoring system where you have every statistic will be given a positive or negative scoring value. It takes into consideration about 350 different metrics. So you can look at those and then maybe generate an index over a season to say who is this player based on those statistics. So the top three so far this season are David Silva, Eden Hazard and Marcus Alonso, based on the metrics that we collect. It is a fairly simple method, so it's obviously not taking into context like opponents and things like that. So you usually do get the bigger sides who do a lot more during games higher up in those index. David Silva, though, you can't really argue against that, and same with Hazard. Alonso, to the eye, I don't think maybe the third best player this season, but you do have players like Sterling and Walker up there as well. But yeah, David Silva has been fantastic this season. Leads the league in terms of chances created for open play. And he's probably still as good, if not better, than he was when he first joined Manchester City. I mean, a different style of player now. And he's turning 33 in January and still really tearing up the Premier League in midfield.
He's like a fine wine, isn't he, David Silva?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's, as we said on Monday, I think he's somebody who really benefits from having much better players around him and from the system. I'm curious because we got some stick for this on Twitter. And obviously it's a personal definition. You guys can define it any way you want. But should we view player of the season as the guy who's been most productive or the best? My personal view is who's most important to the team. In other words, if David Silva disappeared and if Phil Foden or Gundogan had played every minute that David Silva has taken in that role, because obviously you can't pretend that Kevin De Bruyne isn't injured, how much worse would City be?
Not much. I think it's different with Chelsea and Hazard. I think he does make a huge difference because he's a one-of-a-kind player. But with City, those sort of players are they're quite similar in style and someone... But that's the recruitment and management of the City, that they've been able to find people that can step in.
I mean, fundamentally, it's the issue with like team game versus individual game. Whereas, correct me if I'm wrong, but if Dejan Lovren had taken all of Van Dijk's minutes this season, would Liverpool be second 2 points behind City?
I mean, that's a sensible way of measuring this award. I mean, but it's clearly fair, it's not the way it's won every year.
Yeah, and it's a way also, let's be fair, it also penalises David Silva for being on a very good team with very good players. But I just wonder about the way we think about this, because when I look at City, I would argue that perhaps Fernandinho or Aguero are more difficult to replace. Like, I think the drop-off from Aguero to Jesus, especially bearing in mind Jesus's form, or the drop-off from Fernandinho to Delph or Gundogan or Stones in midfield or whatever he would do, that would have a much bigger impact, right?
If you were to pick the player of the season based on that, though, Wilfred Zaha would win it every year.
That's what I wanted to get at.
Well, Palace haven't won a single game he's missed since the start of last season, or hasn't started in, and that's, I think, around 12 or 13, 14 games, which is massive impact. And when he does play, the points per game is much, much higher, obviously, because they don't win games without him. You know, it's great defenders aren't, their metrics on the ball aren't that important. It's what they do off the ball, their positioning, it's everything like that.
And their presence. So yeah. Someone like Van Dijk, he's a huge, the other players around him look at him and think, we've got this guy alongside us now, and it brings more from them. And I think he's sort of, just the whole perception of Liverpool's back line is completely transformed because of his arrival.
In the 2002 World Cup, Rio Ferdinand, I can't remember which game it was a particularly strong game for Ferdinand, had no tackles in that match, and a national newspaper, Rio, which I'm not going to name, it wasn't the Times, refused to accept that he didn't make a tackle in that game, and were arguing with us to say, no, he would have made tackles, he was excellent. And in the paper the next day, they'd put in 6 tackles for Rio Ferdinand, just because they thought the people reading the newspaper will want to see that. So
fake news.
Yeah, well,
who knew back then?
Early days of fake news.
As a wise person once said, if as a defender you have to make a tackle, it's because somebody made a mistake. Either you made a mistake or your teammates made a mistake. So,
well, we've got to get to it, haven't we? We've got to find out who you think is your player of the season so far. Gregor, let's hear your player then.
Yeah, sorry to repeat, but I'm going for Van Dijk for all those reasons and his sort of general presence in that back four now.
Matt?
I will go with Eden Hazard, because 11 goal involvements in 11 games, 7 goals, 4 assists. He's been involved in a goal every 71 minutes this season, and it's clear that when he plays, Chelsea are much, much stronger. When he doesn't, it goes back to what Gab was saying about David Silva. If Silva was to miss a game, City can replace him. Chelsea, not so much, even though they're a little bit better this season.
Gab, do you want to have your...
Why don't you give me yours?
Okay, well, I'm torn on this. I get the Virgil van Dijk vote because he's just been a fantastic leader for them. He's brought so much security to the defence for Liverpool. But actually, it is a Manchester City player, but it's Bernardo Silva. I just think he's really come into that team this season. Bear in mind, last season, he found it difficult, perhaps, to adapt to the English game. Obviously, you had David Silva, you had Kevin De Bruyne as the two attacking midfielders, so he perhaps wasn't used in that obvious role for him. But with the misfortune of De Bruyne's injury this time around, he's been able to slot into that team, and I think he's been fantastic so far.
Now we're going to ask you for your non-Big Six choices outside the Big Six, and we know Matt has a good one, so there'll be some pressure on you.
I mean, I know you guys spoke about David Brooks before, and he has been a revelation. I think actually he surprised Bournemouth. I saw one of their last pre-season games against Nottingham Forest, and I spoke to a coach, and they thought you'll need a year to bed, and I won't name this coach.
I might have spoken to the same guy you did.
Yeah, so I think that most of that was
in a different language.
They thought it was going to take him time to adapt to how Bournemouth play, really. But he's done that amazingly well, and I think he's been fantastic. I think so many Wolves players as well, but I think Matt Doherty as well has been remarkable as well this season, the way he's adapted to the Premier League. So he's someone who stepped up with aplomb, and he's been at the club for so long and played with him in League One all the way up to the Premier League, and he's flourishing. So I like to see those kind of stories as well.
So your choice is Brooks?
It's got to be Brooks, though, yeah. It's got to be.
Bournemouth fans, I hope you're listening, because I'm going for another Bournemouth player, Ryan Fraser.
Oh, yes.
So 6 assists this season, most in the Premier League. But most interestingly, so he's already created 13 clear-cut chances for his teammates this season. That is the most across all of the European leagues, ahead of Neymar.
More than Jadon Sancho.
Ahead of Neymar, 11. And Messi, 10. So the top 3 players in the world at the moment, Ryan Fraser, Neymar, Messi.
Well, Messi's been injured.
Yeah, well, forget that. Yeah. It doesn't matter, does it?
Oh, it's minor details.
Don't twist the stats, Gab. And then third most chances created this season in the Premier League. He cost Bournemouth £400,000 from Aberdeen in 2013. And last season, really sort of a kind of breakthrough season in the Premier League. Very good at winning penalties, which is useful when you play for Bournemouth because they win a lot. They've won 6 already this season. yeah, just a really tricky customer and underrated. A lot of people talk about Brooks, and Fraser seems to top quite a lot of stat charts, but no one ever seems to mention him as much as Brooks this season. So I think, yeah.
No, I agree. I think Ryan Fraser, the wee man, I remember seeing him at Ipswich, thought he was brilliant at Ipswich when he was there. And it's taken maybe a bit of time for him to fulfil his potential, but I think he's starting to do that now. And as you, the stats are suggesting, he's one of their best
players. Two special shouts as well. Ooh, James Maddison, who's been brilliant this season for Leicester.
I love me some James Maddison.
He created the most
what
chances.
Is it with all these like players from here that are number 10s and can actually play and look up? I'm not, obviously, you mentioned Brooks and Maddison.
He was standout last season in the Championship. Most chances created, 124. He was only two players to have 100 or more. He's going that way this season, 26 already in the Premier League. But also a special mention for an older player who's playing really well this season. Etienne Capoue has been so good for Watford. He's been absolutely exceptional in midfield. When he was missing against Southampton this week, he was replaced by Chalobah, who arguably is probably Watford's best player. But Watford looked weaker without Capoue, and it's probably his best Premier League season so far. He struggled at Spurs and at Watford, kind of in and out the first few seasons with new managers. But this season, he's made that position his own with Doucouré, and those two, possibly like outside the top six, you could say Watford probably have the best midfield in the Premier League.
Imagine if Doucouré, Capoue, and the fit Chalobah.
Would and you then take Will Hughes and Pereira as well?
No, but would you take those guys relative to every Manchester United midfielder named Paul?
Doucouré should be playing for a top six side. He's that good. I think there's injury worries about
and
him.
Still, and still, you gave a shout to Capoue ahead of him.
Yeah, but I think because Doucouré, I'm a Watford fan, so that's why.
Ah, I see, yes.
Doucouré
Kiko
is
Femenia, very effective this
very
season.
Very good player. Doucouré, you expect that from him, but I think Capoue, a lot of Watford fans didn't think he'd play this season. Chalobah was getting back to fitness. You'd think Will Hughes would probably play in the central midfield role, but he's been pushed out wide a bit more. But this season, Capoue has just been exceptional. Before this weekend, before his missing his top of interceptions this season in the Premier League as well, and in Europe. So he is very good at reading the game. And he's got this weird sort of languid style that's like a basketball player almost, where he plays on his toes. It's quite interesting to watch. He's very rangy. He's got a very long stride as well. So, yeah, great player. Love Capoue.
Gam, did you give us your player of the season?
No. Intentionally so.
Why?
Because it's going third. It's 12 games. It's not a significant sample size. It's yeah, I got skewered for suggesting that it might not be David Silva because he's replaceable. So
no. Oh, so it would have been David Silva.
I'm going to sulk on this one.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Let's move on then to the goalkeeper of the season so far. Gab, come on then. You're sulking.
Yeah. I have no trouble here choosing one, and I'm going to choose somebody outside the top six, and it's Rui Patricio.
Good pick, I think. Tell us more.
I hear people go on about Wolves. I look at it sort of within the system, right? I don't think Wolves give up a ton of chances, and they're well coached, and people like wax on about Cody and Bowley and whatever, and Doherty, of course. But I think a lot of times when they do give up chances, I think that they're actually good chances. Again, I have no idea if the data back me up on this. And they're difficult saves. And I think he's come up really big. This is not a guy. Obviously, the whole circumstance is about how Wolves got him with the canceling of the contract, and then the money getting paid late. I mean, he is a guy who, in ordinary circumstances, I think would have been beyond Wolves' reach. Well, if not for the fact that their owner also owns 20% of his agent's business. But apart from that, we've been through that. But no, he's been, I think he's been real, real value added to Wolves this season. And, you know, he's not the only reason they're doing so well, but a couple of results would have gone differently if not for him.
Gregor, as a defender, which of the goalkeepers you've seen in the Premier League would inspire confidence, do you think?
I'm going to go with Alisson. And I think all those things Gab was saying about the ease of the shots he's facing and stuff, I think probably he's had a fairly comfortable start to life in Premier League because of the improvement of the defence in front of him. But at the same time, along with Van Dijk, he's sort of, he's a commanding presence, and he come and collect crosses, and I think he's someone who has again improved. That was the two positions that Liverpool had to strengthen in to transform their season, and they've done so, and it looks to be working very well so far.
already kept the same number of clean sheets as Mignolet did last season as well in the Premier League. 7. So, yeah.
Not a bad start.
It's not really fair to Mignolet, given that
19 games.
He didn't start every
19 games started last season, Mignolet. Alisson started 12 this season.
He's conceded 12 less goals already.
5 goals conceded this season, yeah.
12 less goals then at this point last season, yeah. And that's not all him, but...
It wasn't all down to Mignolet. Let's be clear about that. But as a defender, you need to have a goalkeeper behind you, don't you, that you have confidence in. Mignolet, whether or not it was his own fault, just kind of attacked a little bit by the media, and it gave him this conscience of like, oh no, they're expecting me to make an error that maybe contributed more towards his errors than the sort of expectation of him making them. But Alisson is definitely, yeah, he's, when you've got a goalkeeper like him, it's just his stature as well. He's a big guy and
very handsome guy too.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, that might be the reason. That might be
the sole
reason.
Theme as well.
He's not great at Cruyff terms, but apart from that,
no, yeah, that's the thing. He has got a stupid error in him, maybe, but not as frequent as previous goalkeepers at Liverpool. But I'll hit you with the data on this. Mm-hmm. So
you haven't given us your choice yet, or are you going with Alisson too?
Yes, I'm going to go with Alisson because of the difference he's made, but he's not the best goalkeeper according to the stats. So I know you know about expected goals.
A little bit.
Not many listeners might know about expected goals. So basically, it's a way of looking at the quality of a chance. So if a penalty, for example, will be given a value of 0.76 because 76% of the time that will be scored based on historical data. So each chance you have in a game, we can give a sort of a rating for, really. And then you can apply that to goalkeepers as well. And then you can also use the fact that where it went on the goal. So you can give an expected goals on target value. So a shot that might come from 5 yards out in the top corner of a goal, you'd expect to score 97% of the time or something like that. So you can then look at goalkeeper and say, OK, how many of these goals are they preventing? So this season, Alisson has faced shots on target that you would expect teams to score 9 goals from. He's actually only conceded 5, so he's exceeded his number by 4. So really he's prevented 4 goals that an average goalkeeper would have conceded. The best this season is Hugo Lloris, who has prevented 5, well, it's actually 5.3 goals because it's all round up, but 5 goals on average. Interestingly, David De Gea last season was miles ahead of anyone in Europe.
Can I just jump in on Lloris just to remind everybody that Lloris missed, what?
8 games he's played this season as well, yeah.
Yeah, so he's missed 4 games.
Mm. I think a lot of those were against West Ham. He made a lot of really good saves against West Ham. But last season, David De Gea, he essentially prevented 14 goals that an average goalkeeper would have conceded in the Premier League, which papered over the cracks for Man United last season. This season, it's 1. So it's kind of like averaged out to what a normal goalkeeper would be expected to concede. 1 isn't a bad value. I mean, he's still preventing goals from being scored that average goalkeepers would have conceded. But compared to last season, that might be why Manchester United aren't doing so well at the back of the season. It's not De Gea's fault. It's just that he's now reverted to the mean, really, of what is expected of him.
Sometimes I wonder if Matt and I are the only people who find this stuff interesting about about sort of data and goalkeepers. One interesting thing is, I think it's generally, for analytics people generally tell you that this is one of the single toughest positions to get to judge and to know what the data means, because in the end, as we've discussed in one previous podcast also, the samples are ultimately pretty small because goalkeepers don't actually face that many shots.
No. And
one thing I want to say, just using this type of approach that Matt just described, if you remember the year that Liverpool signed Mignolet, the year before, the two guys who had by far the best, who ranked highest in the Premier League based on these metrics, were De Gea and Mignolet. And that was a big part of the reason, I'm told, why Liverpool signed Mignolet. And one big issue is that there's an issue of repeatability with these stats, that with a lot of them, with, you know, Marcos Alonso will produce comparable stats year after year, as will Aguero. With goalkeepers, they seem to be all over the place. Natalie, we need your nomination, then your non-Big Six nomination.
Well, to be fair, though, mine is the same as yours, Rui Patricio.
There
I think
go.
He's done very well. He commands his box so well, great shot stopper. You can't forget that save that he pulled off Raheem Sterling, the City game, where he used the opposite hand when he's diving towards his left. I mean, I just think he's been excellent so far.
I think the reason we don't choose Alisson is that you and I are not blinded by the guy's movie star good looks, unlike these two.
Okay, you're
non-top six, I'd say Fabianski. I really think he's a good shot stopper, decent goalkeeper.
I'd say the same about Ryan. I mean, even that crazy Solbamba goal at the weekend. He made an amazing save just before that. He makes some real eye-catching saves, so I think he's been great.
Burnley have definitely missed a goalkeeper in the calibre of Heaton or Pope this season as well. Those two really good shot stoppers.
It has been one of those big... Well, look at her bigger fan.
Poor Joe Hart.
Joe Hart's biggest fan here.
No, I'm not at all, but I just suddenly thought, oh, it's got even worse for Joe Hart. Right, let's move on then. So we've done our goalkeeper of the season, we've done the player of the season as well, but what about the manager of this season? Who's been the best gaffer so far after 12 games? Gregor?
You have to look at what Eddie Howe's done so far, but I think we need to see that elongated, prolonged for the rest of the season to really give him that award.
What, 4 years in the Premier League aren't enough for you?
Well, surviving, yeah, but if he's to make it in the top six or stay in the top six for the rest of the season, then, yeah, he's manager of the year. Pochettino, with all the sort of turmoil, injuries, so many players at the World Cup, there's so many points better off as well than last season. But I think Sarri, I like to see a coach, the evidence of their work in the training ground straight away, and that's definitely been the case. He's only signed Kepa and Jorginho.
And Kovacic.
And Kovacic, yeah. But his style of play has been immediately evident and very welcome as well, I think. So I've really enjoyed watching Chelsea this season. So I'm going to say Sarri.
First manager in Premier League history to go unbeaten in his first 12 games as well.
Yeah,
Football didn't begin in 1992, young man.
Last manager to do it was in 1947. It was an Arsenal manager. Bilegger came up with that one.
Yeah, so, that is true, yeah.
But who was the manager in 1947?
Tom Whittaker was manager of Arsenal in 1947.
Yeah, it's been a great impact that Sarri has made at Chelsea so far. Gab, what do you think?
Within the big six, I'm going to give you a big six and a non-big six answer. I struggle to overlook the fact that Pep Guardiola is without his best player and has been without his best player for all but 84 minutes, and he's replicating last year's numbers. We consider that all the excuses that we normally throw out when people underachieve, right? Like, you know, I follow Inter Milan in Italy. Perisic is terrible. Like, oh, but look, poor guy, he had the World Cup. Yeah, okay. So did Walker, so did Sterling. He's doing all this without the guy who I think is actually head and shoulders his most talented player. Sorry, David, and that's Kevin De Bruyne. So I would lean towards Pep with a shout out to Sarri simply because he had no time to work. Sarri's football, a bit like Eddie Howe's football, is based on there's not much improvisation, right? So much of it is coordinated movements, repetition, blah, blah, blah. It takes him a really long time for the players to learn it. And, you know, he came back, there was nobody there other than Ross Barkley, and he still managed to get the results. Only unbeaten team in all competitions in Europe, Chelsea.
Community Shield, they lost that.
The Community Shield is not a real football match, as we know.
Okay, so that's your top six best manager. Yeah. Matt, did you give us yours?
No, mine's shared between Eddie Howe and Javi Garcia. Garcia, because he's
I know there'd be another Watford guy in there.
Well, yes. They're both level on 20 points, and Garcia gets it because he's actually been able to hang around at Watford without being sacked. True. But since 2009, there's only been 10 other occasions of a non-Big Six side having 20 or more points from their opening 12 games. All of those finished top 10, so looking good for Bournemouth and Watford so far. But word of warning, they have exactly the same record as Hull did in 2008-09 with 20 points, 1-6 drawn, 2-4.
Under the magical Phil Brown?
Yeah, and they finished 17th that season and managed to stay up on the final day where Phil Brown sang for them. So maybe Eddie Howe or Javi Garcia will be singing on the final day.
Have we had your pick, Natalie?
No. I am a little bit torn again. I think Maurizio Pochettino has done a great job considering all the drama at Tottenham this season.
The injuries.
Injuries, the stadium woes, all of that. Yes, indeed. The fact that actually they've been entertaining on the pitch in terms of the drama of games that they've played in as well. They've had their best start to a Premier League season. I think he's done very well, Maurizio Pochettino. So maybe in my top six, he might get the nod. But equally, I do think Eddie Howe has just been fantastic. They're a club that is progressing year on year. I guess the only issue with him is just how far can he take Bournemouth? Where is that ceiling? But as for a start for a season, I'm going to go for Eddie Howe.
A lot of good shouts, but I have to go with Nuno.
Yeah.
Huge, obviously, we know all the story behind it. But also, I think he's also been quite fortunate that he hasn't had injuries. And he was able to keep the same 11 for a long time. But the way they play is really impressive, and everybody's really on message.
I agree. has to be Nuno. The system is king. There isn't a standout star really for them, although they have so many technically excellent players. But and they're playing in exactly the same way as they did in the Championship. I watched them a lot last season, and it's another triumph for coaching. Excellent coaching. They're so well drilled, and they know how they play. They've taken to the Premier League like a duck to water. So absolutely has to be Nuno.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been very polite. We've been bigging up a lot of players and managers. Now we can be nasty. Who's been underachieving as a player so far? I don't know if there's any stats that can tell us that, Matt.
Technically, there are. I've got to be careful because I can't be too negative about players. We work with a lot of clubs.
Of course.
But I think the clubs will know.
Yeah, Romelu Lukaku for me. I think I expect more from him. He is a top player, a really good player. But whether or not it's down to confidence issues or the way he's being utilised by Mourinho this season, he seems to be playing a bit deeper than normal. Lukaku is best when he's a box player. He's a striker. He's the ultimate striker you can have. This season, 4 goals in 11 games. He's only attempted 20 shots, which is a shot every 40 minutes. For someone like Lukaku, that's pretty low, really. You'd expect more. And only 6.7% of his total touches are shots. That's the fewest he's ever had in a single Premier League season. So maybe he's dropping a bit too deep, not having those shots. But is that down to confidence? Is he not being given the best chances, so he's having to drop deeper to do that? Who knows?
I know it's fairly obvious, but it has to be Sanchez. I mean, the regression in 12 months has been extraordinary, really. And how unhappy he looks, and how he can't get into a team that is really struggling. So yeah, I think it has to be Sanchez, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him leave, actually.
In January, or...?
Potentially, yeah.
Do you think it's down to the management? Do you think it's the way... none of their players look happy. They don't look like they enjoy playing football at the moment.
They don't, but the other players are doing a lot more, regardless. And I think, yeah, we can talk about the management, and who is he getting the most out of, Mourinho, really? Is there anyone? I'm not sure. But Sanchez really is head and shoulders above the rest in terms of... how much he's regressed.
I don't view this as like a negative towards a player. I view this more as like a player I thought would have a big impact and who, you know, I was really excited to see. You could mention a whole host of United players. You guys both mentioned United players, but I'm going to mention a Liverpool player, and that's Naby Keita. This is a guy who certainly is a guy analytics people love. I mean, absolutely adore. He's a guy who... obviously, the club knew he was coming for a very long time, so they could prepare. They could build a whole system around him. I know he's had an injury as well. He didn't necessarily hit the ground running as quickly as I would have expected. And I set the bar really high with him. I really thought, you know, he was going to walk in there and be as important to Liverpool as Firmino or Salah or Van Dijk. And obviously, that hasn't happened yet. But we're 12 games in, but he's somebody who I think can achieve a whole heck of a lot more.
Do you want to know mine?
Yes, I do.
Do you know mine? Mine's a little bit... it might be controversial, I don't know, but I was really thinking about it. And someone who's just disappointed me in terms of not really making a mark at all is Theo Walcott. I know he's had his injury
problems. Who's that?
Yeah, exactly. I know he's had injury problems, of course, but scoring 2 goals so far in the Premier League for Everton is just not really enough, is it? And there was so much hope for this guy, and yet... he's just not delivering, and it's a bit of a shame. So for me, he's underachieving.
His limelight's been stolen a little bit by Richarlison's arrival with Everton, and everyone loves him now, and Walcott's kind of been a bit forgotten there.
Yeah, and I think he's someone that is easily droppable.
It's shocking that, you know,
Yeah, it's a shame because I think he does have certain attributes that, for a Premier League player, are useful. But he also has certain attributes that
every year for the last 10 years.
Yeah,
I don't. Yep. You talk about signing players on rep. That's the Iwaka.
Yes,
he'll give you 5 good games a season, and it might be a world beater in those 5 games. But the rest of the time, yeah, can go missing quite a lot.
So we've talked about the underachieving player, but what about the overall team that we should be expecting more from? And obviously there was big news yesterday with a departure, Gab.
Yes, Slavisa Djukanovic departing Fulham and replaced by Claudio Ranieri. I think you're kind of a leading question from you, because the third biggest spending team in all of Europe. I don't think enough has been made of this, so let me repeat this. Fulham, little Fulham from Craven Cottage, newly promoted to the Premier League, were the third biggest net spenders in Europe behind Liverpool and Juventus, I think. This is just unreal that you can do this and be dead last in the table. Alison Rudd has a piece in the Times about how Shad Khan, such a nice and patient, remember she told this, he was willing to sack him, but such a nice, all of a sudden, like, he stopped being patient, or maybe he was patient for too long. I don't know, but I think you can look at their recruitment as well. I think,
absolutely.
I just think they signed too many players without having a sense of a hierarchy. I don't know that Djukanovic was necessarily, I don't know how on board he was with these signings, because you look at some of these, they don't fit together. Taken as individuals, you know, hey, look, Sarri, look, Barcelona wanted him. He's a guy with a big upside. Torreira, who's a Sarri-type player, is doing really well, so maybe that's not a bad one. Anguissa is a guy who I know a lot of scouts were going nuts about last year. You know, Schürrle on loan, calculated risk. The guy won a World Cup. He's from Borussia Dortmund. He's a skillful player. He's already been in England. Makes sense. Vieto is another one, right? Everything makes sense. But then you just can't put the pieces together at all.
Djukanovic doesn't, I don't think he had a lot of say in a lot of the recruitment, and I think he's been quite public about that.
Which is fine, too, because Djukanovic was
used
to that.
It happens.
He was at Watford, he didn't have any say there. So
last season in the Championship, he was very good because it was working well, where he'd quickly change teams if it wasn't working. He'd adapt to every opponent he played. The Premier League's much harder than that, we all know that. And it's kind of like his team don't look like they know what they're being asked to do. Are we this free-flowing attacking team that goes for the games, or are we sitting back at certain games? And he's moved Sessegnon around, who was like one of their main players last season. Kearney hasn't really had the impact that he had last season. Johansson was really good last season, hasn't played so much this season. I think he was panicking from the off. It seems like the right decision, really, there. Conceded the most goals in the top five leagues this season. Only one team in Premier League history has conceded more goals than them after 12 games.
Was it the year Derby got 3 points?
Barnsley in 97-98 exceeded 35.
And what happened to Barnsley that season?
They melted back to the Football League.
Oh, dear. As we've already suggested, there is the Tinker Man now in place, Claudio Ranieri. What do you think he's going to do, Gab, at Fulham?
I mean, he's obviously highly motivated to come back. There's a big parallel in some ways with the 2006-07 Serie A season, when Claudio Ranieri, having been sacked by Valencia on his return, and he's terrible, having gone on a long holiday, comes back and takes over Parma, who were either last or second to last, and boom, they finish in mid-table. I think he's going to be asked to do that. I think he's got tremendous owners who will support him. I think he's got tremendous amounts of talent on his team. You know, I think he looks at this, he says safety isn't that far away. What is it, 4 points, right? And I think he thinks that he can do that.
As Gab said, they have a good team, they have a good squad. It's not like he's coming into a team with, like, they can't reinforce until January and they're going to really eke their way to try and win some points until then.
The Fulham squad is a top 10 squad, arguably.
Yeah. Plus, being based in London, having a lot of money in January, they can recruit quite well. So,
and he can walk to work from his house.
Yeah.
And I think after so many new arrivals, the sort of dynamic of that team from last season has just been shattered. I mean, Tim Ream said as much afterwards. So I think it needed a new manager, a new voice to come in, and that's kind of, that'll reawaken everyone and think, right, we've got a new man at the helm here, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them go up the table, yeah.
So are Fulham our overwhelming favourite for underachieving team, then?
I have to be.
Yes, which is, you know, good news for Manchester United.
Yes, we don't have to talk about them. Okay, why don't we talk about the best newcomer? There's been a mention already for David Brooks. So does he lead the way as the best newcomer to the Premier League? Gab?
I'm going to go with Ruben Neves.
You are loving Wolves at the moment.
I just think he's a really good player. I don't. I'll give you two, actually. The other one is being Lucas Torreira. Lucas Torreira, there was so much skepticism about him. First, when he originally came to Italy, because he's so little. But also, you know, Lucas Torreira moving to Emory. I remember talking to a scout for a London-based big club. And he said, look, this guy was way down on Emery, and he said, look, this is what he does. He comes from a certain brand of football, and, oh, look, he likes little guys who can pass and play. Like, this guy's going to get eaten alive in the first, you know, English thug who goes and kicks him 20 feet in the air. And we saw that that hasn't actually happened. In fact, on several occasions, it's been Lucas Torreira kicking somebody 20 feet in the air, right? So I think he's made Xhaka better. You know how Xhaka used to be, like, the butt of all jokes. I think he's been reasonable this season. That's my choice. Hopefully he can make, if you're an Arsenal fan, he'll make Guendouzi better too. I think, I know
he looks a player as well.
You think so? Because yeah. I think opinions kind of divided on him too. But so I'm going to say, but I mean, all these guys we have on our list here are pretty good.
I like the way Guendouzi progresses with the ball. He's always positive. Everything he tries to do is positive, and his eye for a sort of a through ball. There's one particularly at Stamford Bridge this season for a goal. It was a chance in the first half of that game where he threaded it through three different Chelsea players with one single pass. It was fantastic. His vision for such a young player who hasn't played top flight football before was fantastic. And to be thrown straight in that side, Emery must think quite highly of him as well.
Okay, so Torreira gets your nod, Gregor?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going for David Brooks, but as I said, I thought Matt Doherty was...
You picked David Brooks for everything.
I mean,
team of the year,
He has been.
Even at the expense of dissing your countryman, Ryan Fraser. Well, Fraser was here already, but still.
Well, as a fullback, I also want to mention again Doherty, because it's a difficult role in that Wolves system. So much running, defensive responsibilities and attacking responsibilities, and the way that, you know, he links up so well, he runs inside rather than overlaps, and couple of assists and a goal. I think he's been brilliant so far.
Matt, what about you?
I feel like we should mention Jorginho. I think he's been brilliant for Chelsea so far this season. Adds that sort of measure of control in midfield. Does the simple things well. But although he's not a newcomer, he's pretty much a newcomer because we've forgotten about him. Ross Barkley this season has been so good for Chelsea. And it's encouraging to see someone who, as an England fan as well, like, you can have someone who can progress with the ball like that, who has no real fear when he's playing on the top of his game. We didn't see enough of that at Everton, but there's obviously a player in there, and it feels like he's a new player, a completely new player at Chelsea, and hopefully he'll still keep getting chances at Chelsea under Sarri. But also, yeah, Brooks, Maddison, two players we mentioned already, really performed well, but Torreira as well was one of my picks. He's that player that Arsenal have needed for a few years, and he will change that side for the better, and he has so far.
Well, again, they've been mentioned already. I love it when a player can step up from the Championship and just effortlessly just, you know, fit in to the Premier League. And so James Maddison and David Brooks, I'm finding it very difficult to pick between the two. I think both of them have been fantastic. They've been standout players. Just for the fact that they have just progressed so easily and transformed into a Premier League player like they've been playing it for a very long time. So I'm kind of splitting it between Brooks and Maddison.
We'll give a shout out to the Leicester fullback, to Pereira. As well, I think that guy's a player and a half, and, you know, he's bounced around different clubs and stuff, and I think there's been some people who are maybe a little bit skeptical about some of the people behind him and who he's involved in, but he's just taken to that so well.
Okay, well, our last category is your favourite thing of the season so far. So it could be a goal, it could be a moment, it could be a stat, Matt, even. So anyone want to come up with two. Yes,
one is Chelsea v Liverpool, actually at the final whistle, Sarri and Klopp looking at each other with those big smiles and like, this is so much fun. I love rivalries between managers. And I, you know, this is part of bread and butter and stuff and the mind games and all this stuff. But two guys who served up tremendous football and who have a genuine respect for each other and who just enjoyed it and kind of show you that, you know what, there really is another way. And then the other thing I want to mention is that absurd goal that Arsenal scored, the Ramsey one. Just because, and again, maybe you play it again 100 times and they don't score. But that was just incredible.
Mm. Seeing Arsenal play with a bit of freedom and fun again is nice to see, really. Yeah. I mean, I'm not an Arsenal fan, as you know, but I really enjoy watching Arsenal play in full flow, and I think Emery's brought that enjoyment back. And seeing Aubameyang and Lacazette play together when they do, it's wonderful to see two strikers play with each other like that, and they just look so good when they play together.
But that's not your choice. Your choice,
not my choice.
Let me guess. It's Isaac's success finally scoring.
Isaac's success finally scoring and not drinking two bottles of Baileys is a success, but having a title race.
I remember when this happened. I spoke to somebody at the club who told me, like, you won't believe. I got a call the night before. The story's coming out tomorrow. You won't believe what this guy's done. And he gave me all the details, including some things that didn't make it into the paper. Who drinks two bottles of Baileys?
You have to applaud.
How is that even possible?
Yeah, from the bottle as well. Is impressive.
He's like a big kid, right?
And it wasn't Christmas.
He's like a child.
Yeah, he is young. It was a naive error. I'm sure he felt
it. Oh, we forgive him for that reason. Yeah. He's young.
My favourite thing so far is we have a title race. We have three unbeaten teams for the first time after 12 games ever in a top flight season. So we have an actual title race between three teams, it looks like. And you never know, Arsenal might get involved in that, Tottenham might get involved in
that. When's the last time? I mean, do you have to go back to 93 minutes and 20 seconds to find the last time we had a legit title race? Am I forgetting something obvious?
Probably. Liverpool City, when the slip, was that the last time? Probably we had a real title race that actually looked like it could go down to the wire. On the flip side, it's also the first top flight season we've ever had seven teams on less than 10 points after 12 games. So we could have a record low total of points to survive this season. So we're seeing a kind of a three-way split in the league at the moment. We're seeing top three, next five, and then you've kind of got
the polarization. Lower half again. I can't wait for a Super League where, like, the top six just break away and just play each other, you know, six times a year. And then the other ones can go join Andrea Radrizzani in Premier League 2.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be fun.
It sounds exciting.
Watford might win it then.
Who knows? Yeah. Could be back in Europe, finally.
Okay, so Gregor, what would you say?
I've written down Aubameyang's goal against Leicester. And it gets in the same theme. Arsenal's sweeping moves and seeing them play with some real joy. Again, Emery's someone who's come in and his impact has been felt pretty immediately, and some of the football they've been producing has been outstanding. So I think that goal stood out for me, to see the smiles on their face and those two strikers as well, sort of in top form. That was a sign of Arsenal sort of returning.
I, like you, appreciate the Aaron Ramsey goal. Thought that was fantastic. I also think the Ilkay Gundogan one in the Manchester derby, the 44 passes.
I
realised
44 passes against traffic cones.
I was about to say that. I was about to say that, but still,
enjoyed it because it made United look really bad, didn't you?
No, I didn't enjoy it for that reason, but it is a bit funny. So maybe a little bit. So yeah.
So can you critique? As a defender. What the hell? I mean, you weren't on the show Monday. We talked about what the hell happened there. If you had been one of those guys for City on the pitch, you wouldn't have screwed up the 44 pass chain, right?
I certainly wouldn't. I've ever given it to someone.
No, I'd be serious.
To make the
no. I don't know. I just thought that was so soul destroying from United. You know, that Lukaku goes off the press on his own. Nobody follows him, and Mata, and nobody. It's 2-1 in the game. It's a derby.
It wasn't one thing or the other. That's the thing. As you say, if they're sitting off, then don't one man go on your own just to close someone down and have the ball passed around you in a triangle. So it was pretty depressing to watch if you're a Man United fan.
That comes down to what we were saying earlier there, but Man United players just don't seem to look like they really care. Even in the derby, they weren't pressing there. But I mean, City did. They had the potential to do that. I mean, they did it last season in the League Cup game. They had 55 passes, I think it was, before a goal, and that was from kickoff. So West Brom didn't touch the ball for the first 2.5 minutes, and City scored with the first chance. But this season, we've got a category called build-up attacks, which is basically any passing sequence of 10 or more passes that end up leading in a shot or a touch in the opposition box. Man City have had 101 of them.
Charles Hughes must love that, right?
Yeah, he could. 101 this season by Man City. The next best is Chelsea with 55. So they're miles ahead. City just build up, attack, 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 with like long passing sequences, and they're so good at it, teams can't get the ball off them.
I mentioned him before, but for those who don't know, Charles Hughes is the guy who wrote the FA's coaching manual together with another man named Charles Reap, who... We shouldn't, as I've been told, we should make fun of them, because if not for them, people like Matt would have probably never had a job, because in some ways they were pioneers.
I've got a Charles Reid tattoo.
Well, they were very good at collecting data, maybe less so at Inter. They're the people who famously said Brazil would be the best team in the world if only they passed the ball less and things like that.
Yes. Well, that is our awards for this, what, third of the season. So very worthy winners, I think we can say.
All hail David Brooks.
And but, Watford.
And they're small sample sizes, Natalie, so it could all be different later.
Absolutely.
Variance.
Indeed, indeed. But that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Matt Furness and Gregor Robertson.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. We'll be back on Monday after England host Croatia in the Nations League and relegate them.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.